and welcome to this edition of the KKFI Arts Magazine Show. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. Glad to have you with us on this marvelous Monday here in the city as we listen to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station, right here in Kansas City. It is a fundraising day for all of you out there. That means you may participate in helping support 90.1 FM KKFI by calling our special number to make your contribution, which is 888-931-0901. That's the number to call to help support community radio here in this area. We have guests as well. It's going to be a busy hour for Michael, but Michael's going to get through it. It's going to be marvelous, of course. There's an old saying, if you think education is expensive, try ignorance. Yes. Keeping up on all of the issues of the day that affect all of this has never been more important. This, of course, is a public affairs program, and as the economy changes, sometimes daily these days, international relations can change within a few hours, and KKFI is the source you turn to when you need to know the unvarnished truth. Ignorance can be costly, but the price tag on bringing you public affairs programming is not. Some may consider this to be public radio, but there's nothing funny about the dilemmas that we sometimes face here as well. Why support KKFI, you say? Well, the effects of the national and local economies change as well, but think of it this way. Do you enjoy listening to this radio station? Do you enjoy listening to this program? Then you need to support what you enjoy. I mean, things... there aren't necessarily dire consequences. That's not the case at all. But, of course, it does keep things going here at the radio station. It does keep the programming flowing your way. Very, very few changes are made once in a while. Sometimes programs change. But most of the time, you can rely on the public affairs programming, the fine music program that you came to enjoy here on 90.1 FM KKFI Community Radio since 1988. I guess it was either the last day of February or the first day of March in 1988 when KKFI signed on the air. The first programmer I heard shortly after signing in was the now late Steve Peters playing his guitar on the air live. That's how it started many, many years ago. It continues today, and it only helps. And it only continues with your support. So if you would, dial 888-931-0901 or on the web, you can make your contribution. If you're working right now, you can't get on the phone, the boss would notice that, wouldn't they? But the boss can't look at everybody's computer screen, can they? So you can get online and go to kkfi.org and make your contribution online. We don't care how you make your contribution. We're just extremely grateful that you make one. And we know that you listen to commercial radio now and then, and you know what media consolidation means, cookie-cutter type programming. KKFI is very diverse, and every few hours, things change. You have public affairs programming in the morning. You have morning buzz mid-morning. You have an hour of public affairs programming at noon. You have the jazz from 1 to 3. You have a blues program from 3 to 6. This is general throughout Monday through Friday during the week. Another public affairs block at 6 o'clock p.m. More music into the night. Sometimes music combined with public affairs programming, sometimes during the night as well. That's the basic schedule here at KKFI. It changes a little bit on the weekends. If you're interested in the schedule for all week, they're available here at the station. If you make a contribution, you can ask for one of the schedule changes to be sent your way. We're happy to do that for you. Or you could just go online, of course, at kkfi.org. You can look at the entire schedule of programming for KKFI. You can get a sense of what each program was about. You can learn a little bit about each one of us programmers. We have a little section on there. Some of us even have archived programming. I have that as well. Under archived programming, you can listen to some of the past shows that you may have missed. We're having some technical problems with that now, but that will be solved, and you'll be able to listen to perhaps this program in weeks to come, played back again. So the number to call for more information to help support community radio, it's very important, 888-931-0901 or kkfi.org. Radio the way you make it to be, and you make it be that way with your contributions. Please support us, 888-931-0901. 1-800-259-9201. Well, I have guests today, as I said. Very important guests, actually. Pillars of the community, one might say, because they're so well known and have been involved with the sort of things for a long time. The 2014-2015 season, actually the 57th season of the Kansas City Ballet, is kicking off in just a few days. They are presenting Alice, parenthesis, in Wonderland. So it's a little different take, but it's the basic Alice in Wonderland story here. To help talk about it, Devon Kearney, the artistic director of the Kansas City Ballet Company. He's going to talk a little bit about this. He comes to us via, he didn't make my notes, via Cincinnati, the Cincinnati Ballet Company. Thanks. You can speak.
All right. Thanks for having us on the show.
Well, thank you for coming to Kansas City. You never expected when you come to Kansas City, probably, that it would be so sports oriented.
Oh, no. No, not of course at all.
But, it's not all the time. No. Let's admit it, but it is right now.
It is, and rightly so.
Yeah, so I guess you want to join in on that with the ballet. You're going to have any of the dancers with royal shirts on?
Well, they certainly will be very colorful, and we'll certainly have some Chiefs and Royals colors out there, that's for sure.
That's right. We're going to talk about the show with Devon and with Ramona Panzagrau. She is the music director of the show as well, just heading up the orchestra for
Michael.
Of this. Yeah, it has to be a daunting job, of course.
Well, I'm getting very excited. Tomorrow's my first rehearsal with the orchestra. Of course, we use the Kansas City Symphony in the pit. So the music will sound spectacular.
I'll bet. People say, Alice in Wonderland, I know that story, or I read that book in school, or I saw the Disney movie somewhere along the line. It's very similar in some ways, Devon, but it's also a story within itself, isn't it?
Yes, yes. Well, Alice in Wonderland, first of all, you know, it was written in 1865, but yet it's really kind of timely, frankly. Popular culture, there's some timeless stories that go on, and some of the characters have made their way all the way into today's society and continue to have some influence in today's society, such as the Cheshire Cat, you know, or the Mad Hatter. So you've got these characters that are certainly very much a part of our culture even today, over 150 years later since it was first written.
Beth, an original story by Lewis Carroll, who strangely enough plays a part in the opera, or the ballet.
Actually, it's a really nice, the version of this story, choreographed by Septime Weber, the artistic director for Washington Ballet. He decided to introduce all of the characters that you visit in, that Alice encounters in, we call it Wonderland, in a more realistic setting at the beginning of the ballet, where Lewis Carroll comes and visits a family that he is very familiar with and friends with, and there's this one little girl named Alice Liddell in real life that he knew, and he wrote the story, the book about for Alice Liddell. So Septime, the choreographer, decided to bring Lewis Carroll into the ballet as well and introduce him as a character that then later on takes Alice off into, you know, starts introducing her to this Wonderland because of the book he wrote for her and gives to her. And he later becomes the Mad Hatter, and her twin sisters later become Tweedledee and Tweedledum, and the butler in the family scene becomes the White Rabbit, and the Cheshire Cat and the King of Hearts are played by the father in the family scene. So you see all these characters that come to life and are seen in her dream world, if you want to call it, in a sort of different take. And of course, when she goes to Wonderland, everything is off kilter. All the rules are thrown out the window, and everything is up for grabs, including her height. Of course, as we know, she grows very tall, and she can shrink very small, and, you know, gravity is defied. So it's a very wonderful show. It's very open in terms of its color. The costume design is done by a Cirque du Soleil designer named Liz Vandal. So you can imagine you've got Cirque du Soleil kind of inspirational costume. So it's really eye-popping and very beautiful to see, frankly.
Yeah, the choreography, of course, you're intricately involved in that, I would imagine. Do you put any of your own in there? Do you follow the standard? Or do you walk a nice balance between the two?
Well, first of all, the choreography is done by a gentleman named Septim Weber, right, who's artistic director with Washington Ballet. So it's my job as the artistic director, first of all, to find a ballet that I feel would be challenging for our dancers here at Kansas City Ballet. And then to make sure through the stagers that are hired to come in and reproduce the original choreography that was done by Septim Weber. So that's where I come into play, is finding it and making sure that the choreography is given its due justice the way the choreographer originally intended it to be. And it's a ballet that's had a great life in its very short time period. It's only 2 years old. And it started at the Washington Ballet, performing it at the Kennedy Center in Washington, D.C. That's a pretty good place to start a ballet's life.
So. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and then it went off to Ballet Hawaii, and then it went to Cincinnati Ballet, where it was first introduced to me and where I was able to have the enjoyment to be able to be a part of the staging and rehearsal process and to hear the music for the first time, which I'm going to let Ramona speak a lot more about, that whole process where it went from being a 12-piece chamber work at the Kennedy Center to when it was done at Cincinnati Ballet, where it was fleshed out into a full orchestrated score. But quite a fun story and quite an experience to have the pleasure to be able to work on it and to see Septim's choreography come to life on our Kansas City Ballet artists.
Well, Betsa, is that a challenge, Ramona? All that music and the instruments to kind of parcel that out?
Yeah, it's really wonderful, actually. The music so complements what's happening with the dance. The ballet is bright and beautiful and exciting, and so is the music. The composer, Matthew Pierce, created the score very tightly woven with the story with Septim Weber. They worked very closely. So the music and the dance fit exactly together.
Mm-hmm.
Matthew Pierce originally wrote it for strings and percussion only. So when he rewrote it, commissioned by Cincinnati Ballet to make it for full orchestra, I've got almost 60 players in the pit, and the sound is going to be fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
You hear all sorts of things in the score that are really wonderful. Each character has its own quality, its own musical quality. He loves jazz and he loves blues, so those qualities come out in the score. And in fact, I brought a little bit of musical samples along. If we stick a few in, and we can just talk over them so people can hear what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I have number one loaded up right now. You want me to just go ahead and start it?
Please.
This is the
theme for Alice.
Okay. Oh, you can't hear it, can you? Put on the headphones. Ah. Maybe you can hear it and talk at the same time. Can you hear it well?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, what would you like to say about the theme from Alice?
Well, if you hear, it's a beautiful solo violin melody. We're very lucky this performance series to have Noah Geller, the concertmaster with the symphony, who will be playing that. And it's a very gentle theme, and you'll hear it reappear quite a few times.
Yeah, the theme, is it one that has fallen... followed throughout?
Yes, you see Alice, you hear that somewhere.
Yeah, so do all the characters have a piece
they
that
do.
Kind of fits them?
The next little clip I have is the Queen of Hearts, and that's track two, and you'll hear that she is much more stern.
Yes, it is.
Quite a bit different than Alice, so you really get that feeling of her strength and how stern she is. And she's just a little bit mean. So.
Oh, yeah.
So you hear sort of screeching in the strings. They're almost like screams. I mean, he's really replicated the choreography beautifully with what's happening thematically in the music.
Is that fun for a musician to make
course.
A screech?
The orchestra gets to do all sorts of special effects with this. They retune the instruments a little bit differently, so we have different sounds. We have lots of percussion making different types and different qualities of music. So I think the audience will be just thrilled by what they see and also by what they hear.
Oh, bad.
Yeah. So that's the Queen of Hearts.
Yeah.
And then, of course, every now and then, if you want to go to track three, the White Rabbit hops through the scene, and he has just a little moment of quirkiness.
Okay, come on, cooperate with me now. Okay. There we go.
There he is.
Now that's the rabbit.
Yep. Hopping through.
The White Rabbit symbolizes what? You hear a lot of controversy about that when people discuss the book.
That I couldn't tell you.
Does Devin have an opinion on that?
No, I see the White Rabbit as being sort of this friend of Alice's that is a very consistently positive individual in her normal life. We don't know exactly in what respect he would be played by in her normal life, but she certainly is her guide through this world, this wonderland world where everything is curiouser and curiouser. Yeah. The further down the rabbit hole he takes her.
That's true. I know we all are down the rabbit hole sometimes. Yeah. What about track guy number four?
Yes. Well, the orchestration, you've heard just sort of light things. It also can be very rich and full. And this is one of the scenes where I've got the full orchestra, the beautiful melody, it's soaring themes. I love this section. It's so beautiful. It's Alice's been crying, and she's cried so much that she's created an ocean. So this is called Pool of Tears, and you'll see the dancers swimming across the stage with special effects, and it's glorious. Just listen to this beautiful, full, majestic melody.
Oh, yes.
So happy we have the full orchestration, because mm-hmm. you really get the gist of it with all of the instruments playing.
Yeah. I don't know how much longer it goes.
It's very short.
It's very short.
I'm just giving you snippets.
That's right. Well, that's what we mean.
You have
here.
To come hear more.
That's right.
Well, that's a very good hook, actually. If they want to hear more, they can come beginning on Friday, October 10th at 7:30 p.m. Mm-hmm. Performances will then continue Saturday the 11th at 7:30 p.m. Sunday afternoon, the 12th at 2 o'clock p.m. You give them a few days off. Say, you're not the slave driver.
We know. We try not to do that.
You're not the slave driver that some have the reputation to be. Some begin on Friday the 17th at 7:30. Two big performances on Saturday mm-hmm. the 18th, 2 in the afternoon and 7:30 at night. Right. And it wraps up on Sunday the 19th at 2 o'clock p.m. A matinee. We're speaking with Devin Carney, the artistic director, and Ramona Panzagrau, the musical director for the Kansas City Ballet Company. They're talking about Alice in Wonderland. We've reached the next cut. Should I just go ahead?
Sure. I wanted to give you a little example of some of the jazz and blues that are also in the score.
KFI is a jazz and blues
thing. That's right. Uh-huh. And this is a very slinky Cheshire Cat.
That Cheshire Cat character. Mm-hmm. Represents. Well, we should leave it to their imagination. But yeah, I find by listening, or at least I remember originally reading the stories mm-hmm. as I got older and read perhaps what some of the background was who he might have been poking fun at, perhaps.
Well, I certainly see Cheshire Cat as being one of those characters that tries to encourage Alice to loosen up a bit, because she was a very logical individual in the book.
Some of us are like that, aren't we?
Well, and speaking of loosening up, the last little piece I brought you is the Mad Hatter, who is also a very jazzy little guy.
The Mad Hatter. Now, there's an analysis there. Yes, indeed. The Mad Hatter would need a sit down with a psychiatrist.
Yes. A very big couch.
That's right, a very big couch. Now, is the music for the Mad Hatter as unpredictable as the Mad Hatter itself?
Oh, absolutely. Listen to my trombone sliding all over the place in the bass and the syncopation and the rhythm.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's an interesting point right there, what you said. The fact that you can hear that. Yeah. You can hear the isolation of that. Okay. See, I hear it all blended together. Oh. But you can hear certain instruments as you're listening.
Absolutely. Well, that's my job.
Did it take a while, years of training to isolate?
To isolate? You know, I've always heard music that way. One of the reasons I love to work with dancers is because they do hear music a little differently than I do, and it usually opens up a whole new horizon for me.
So if one of the violinists makes a slight mistake, you can tell who it was and where it was?
Well, yeah.
But,
you know, I have the Kansas City Symphony, so we have very few mistakes with wonderful group of players.
They make zero mistakes, I would say. What about the dancers, Devin? Does everything go perfectly each time?
No. But that's the beauty of live art and live performance, is that every single performance is different, unique, and an experience that you can only enjoy the most by being there with the artists, both musicians as well as dancers, to experience it live. And it's a glorious thing to watch a live performance of dancers. And, you know, mistakes are where some of the best art is made. And, you know, it fits in well with something like Alice in Wonderland, where, you know, the rules don't really necessarily apply when she's in that world. And I think the dancers are doing an incredible job at interpreting this choreography and this score, and I'm really looking forward to seeing it on stage. And it's very challenging for the company as a whole. Some of the work that the steps that Alice does are very, very difficult. The partnering that she has to encounter along the way, because she meets a lot of different characters, as you know, when she falls down that rabbit hole. And she practically dances with every one of those characters. So she's got all these different duets and trios that she has to do. And that means there are all these roles for the rest of the company that can be very, very challenging. There's a very large scene with all these flamingos, for instance. And Septime pokes fun at Swan Lake a little bit during this scene with the flamingos by sort of referencing Swan Lake here and there, and even going to the point of the sense of humor of taking what is typically known as the very famous Four Little Swans dance, which I think has been parodied in most sitcom shows of the 60s and 70s. That music that goes la 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 la, that thing with the Four Little Swans. Well, he takes that and puts the tallest women in the company and puts them all together, four big swans, but he still calls them Four Little Swans. And it's great to see what he does in that one particular moment of just referencing Swan Lake and making it different, and that's appropriate in this world that's the rules don't apply.
That's true.
As an example.
The stage is full, too, because we have the full company. But we also have children who are delightful. And if you want to talk about mistakes, well, some of the most delightful things that happen are when the little children perhaps go the wrong direction. But they've been working very hard since last May to learn their roles. And there are how many children, Devin?
There are 56 roles, which is almost the same size as our current production of Nutcracker that are participating in the performances. And indeed, they did audition for their roles at the end of April. And I just figured it out yesterday that when they get to the performance, it's going to be 5 months and about 2 weeks since their first exposure to this choreography. So, you know, it's been a long road for them, but they're doing an exceptional job.
I'm very
proud of every single student in our academy and how hard they're working and how dedicated they are to getting it right. And
I
know
they're
doing wonderful.
Just think how the pressure that some of them may feel. Maybe they don't realize that it's as important as it is, but they're going to be dancing in the Kaufman Center.
That's right.
Huge Kaufman Center.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
The pressure that would go along with that.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a good thing that they're too young to really realize high level that they're at.
They are certainly enjoying it, I got to say that. And, you know, it's wonderful that we're now starting to bring productions to Kansas City for our students that is something other than just Nutcracker, because that's the way these young students become professional dancers, is by experiencing a broad range of movement across their time as a student. So I'm really happy for them and for the company and how hard they're working, and it's been quite a road, very challenging, intense partnering for the men, and every dancer in the company is doing a phenomenal job, and we're all very, very excited to get it onto the stage and present it for the Kansas City audiences.
Yeah, this Friday night.
That's right.
That's when it happens.
Yeah, 5 days.
5 days.
I'm not counting, am I?
No. Time is getting short. You can call 816-931-2232 for more information and ticketing questions and things like that. It's a big place. They'll probably need to go online even.
Yes.
KCBallet.org to see the seating chart.
That's right.
Perhaps see what's available.
Right, you can buy your ticket online.
Or, yes. You can buy your ticket online as well.
Yeah.
At the Kauffman Center for the Performing Arts. It's a big building for an intimate production.
Mm-hmm.
But it sounds like there's a lot of people in the production as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anybody you want to mention any particular performers? Or do you think as a team?
Well, it's a team effort.
Yeah.
Totally is a team effort. Of course, we have our lead title role, Alice, which is played by Laura Hunt and Sarah Chun, not in the same show, but they alternate in that cast. And I will say that that's been an incredible experience to watch them grow as artists and capture Alice's spirit, not just her steps. And, you know, they've gone beyond being technicians and doing the choreography, and they are at that point where they are really presenting the spirit of Alice and her curiosity. You know, she is an unthinkingly curious individual, and they're both doing an incredible job at portraying that.
Yeah, she's curiouser and curiouser.
Mm-hmm. That's it.
As they say, it all kicks off on Friday the 10th at 7:30 p.m. Performances could continue this coming weekend, the 11th at 7:30, an afternoon Sunday matinee at 2 o'clock p.m., then performances the next weekend as well, Friday the 17th, Saturday the 18th, when there will be two shows, one at 2 o'clock p.m. in the afternoon and one at 7:30 p.m. at night, and ends on Sunday the 19th of October at 2 o'clock p.m., all at the Kauffman Center for the Performing Arts. The number to call for more information is 816-931-2232. Or online at kcballet.org, the 57th season of the Kansas City Ballet. None of us were around for the beginning. Are there some volunteers or workers with the organization who have been around that long?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Kansas City Ballet has a very proud tradition and a very long one in the city, and many of our supporters were there from the beginning.
It's nice to hear. It's nice to hear it is. Devin Carney, the artistic director, and Ramona Panzagrau, the music director, both with the Kansas City Ballet Company, where they'll be performing Alice in Wonderland, opening up this Friday, not too long from now. Thank you so much, both of you, for being
here.
Thanks,
Michael.
We are in the midst of our fall fundraising efforts. The number to call for you to help support community radio here in Kansas City is 888-931-0901. I was handed this note here that Beth Bird, one of our guests from last week, has challenged other production companies to pledge. That's a challenge.
There it is.
When Beth challenges someone, you meet that challenge, because she will never let you forget it if you don't. So thanks to Beth for doing that at all. The number to call, once again, for these other production companies that have been challenged by Beth is 888-931-0901, or you can pledge online at kkfi.org. Thank you so much, both of you, for coming.
Thank you.
And tell us about the Little Lifter for the 57th season of the Kansas City Ballet Company. Hope it goes real well for you.
I'm sure it will.
Thank you. We're going to take our break. When we come back, more information on how you can support Community Radio KKFI and a guest from Lawrence, the Beat Generation. I only remember from television shows and things like that, but we will explore the differences, and people ask me to do this, the differences between the Beat Generation and the Hippie Generation, because sometimes people think of that as the same, but it's not. When we return, you're listening to the Arts Magazine radio program right here on KKFI, 90.1 FM.
Hi, I'm Russ Simmons with Freeze Frame, KKFI's weekly look at the newest cinematic fare at your local theaters. If good intentions and sociological import were all a movie needed to win audiences' hearts and critical acclaim, then The Good Lie would clean up both at the box office and at the Oscars. This well-meaning drama tells the story of some of the Lost Boys of Sudan, a group of refugees who fled their war-torn villages in South Sudan and wound up in, of all places, Kansas City. Although Oscar-winning actress Reese Witherspoon gets top billing, her part as a KC employment counselor is a supporting role. Sudanese actors Arnoldo Singh, Gare Duwani, and Emmanuel Jal star as the lost men who are a bit like fish out of water, attempting to cope with life in the American Midwest. There's much to like in this film, especially the cast members, some of whom were cast from the Kansas City Sudanese American community. French-Canadian director Philippe Falardeau goes out of his way to avoid turning The Good Lie into a manipulative tearjerker. But his austere and overly measured approach is part of the problem. This incredibly compelling story should have made for a riveting emotional experience. Instead, The Good Lie is a competent but fairly routine drama. The first big Oscar contender of the year may well be Gone Girl, a mystery thriller based on the worldwide best-selling novel by Kansas City native Gillian Flynn. Partly filmed in Cape Girardeau, Missouri, Gone Girl is directed by David Fincher and stars Ben Affleck as a bar owner who may or may not have had something to do with the disappearance of his wife. Also opening this week, Annabelle is a horror entry about a creepy doll. Simon Pegg stars in Hector and the Search for Happiness, a drama based on the best-selling novel. 20,000 Days on Earth is a fictional documentary starring musician Nick Cave, and Left Behind is a reboot of the Christian movie franchise about the biblical rapture. Nicolas Cage stars. Well, that's it for this edition of Freeze Frame. Until next time, I'm Russ Simmons with Fox 4 and KKFI FM. Freeze Frame!
Did you know that you might be able to double, maybe even triple your gift with your company's matching gift program? Many companies participate in a program that matches their employees' gifts to nonprofit organizations, such as KKFI. Contact your human resources office and ask if your employer provides matching gifts for your gift.
Hey, thanks to all of you who donated during the recent on-air fall fundraising campaign. If you missed your chance to support the station, it's not too late. Call 888-931-0901 to make your contribution. Or you can go online to kkfi.org. That's 888-931-0901 or online at kkfi.org. Really, thank you from all of us at KKFI, the home of Free Range Radio.
Support for KKFI provided by the KC Renaissance Festival 2014, August 30th through October 13th, including Labor Day and Columbus Day, right in Bonner Springs, Kansas. Featuring 7 themed weekends, 20 entertainment venues, live armored jousting, food, games, rides, and over 100 artisan booths. Directions, tickets, and additional details at kcrenfest.com.
And welcome back to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. Where Michael Hogue, your host, by the way, here your host on the Arts Magazine Show for, I better not say how many years, a long time. Not quite at the beginning of KKFI. KKFI started, of course, as as the Midwest Radio Project. Soon enough, money was raised mostly from bingo games and things of that nature to help construct a tower and get us on the air. Been on the air ever since probably the last day of February, the first day of March, 1988. KKFI has been on the air with fine programming, bringing things your way, alternative programming. Things maybe not heard as much as you would like. Things that are news that's not covered. Bands that usually don't get airtime on commercial radio stations. Theater groups or theater projects that don't get a lot of play over most of the commercial radio stations. But we have the time and want very much to have some of these programs on here on our station. So we make room for them here on KKFI. And the fact is, no matter how much we talk about KKFI, this fun drive is really all about you. It's about what you want coming out of your radio when you wake up in the morning. What do you want to hear when you wake up? I wake up to the clock radio. What do you like to hear when you first open your eyes in the morning? It really does set the tone for your day. The car. I probably listen to the radio the most when I'm driving in the car. And I have some long commutes, so I do a lot of listening in the car. That's the time when you might want to relax. You might want to get informed. It depends on really what you want. KKFI has a little bit of both. Public affairs programming in the morning, public affairs programming at 6 o'clock at night, some really cool jazz and blues music in the afternoon, different styles. The host each day has a little different styles. And then, of course, those of us in the public affairs department, we try to cover things for you. I try to cover the theater and arts scene around in Kansas City. Some other programs on this station do the same. Others follow current events, current issues that are of a local nature, all kinds of different things. You can learn about some of those different programming we have by going to our website, kkfi.org, where you can also make your contribution to Community Radio KKFI. When you do that, the number to call to make it the conventional way by telephone is 888-931-0901. That's the number to call to make your pledge to support Community Radio here in Kansas City. We have some fine phone answering stuff. Mark Manning, who has his own show in the morning, he is there talking, ready to answer the phone and answer your questions and talk to you a little bit. If you've never spoken to Mark Manning on the phone, you'll want to do that. Of course, that would be an experience for you. But the number to call for more information is 888-931-0901 or online at kkfi.org. That's the way you can help support and continue this endeavor that has become a part of Kansas City culture, very much so. 90.1 FM, KKFI. We thank you in advance for your pledge in that regard. Well, back to our guest on the show. We're going to journey on over to the Lawrence Arts Center. Whenever I do an interview with someone involved from the Lawrence Arts Center, it's always a very interesting experience with us to tell us all about the next project, which is actually already underway, performances continue, I guess, on Thursday the 9th at 8 o'clock p.m. with The Nervous Set, a jazz musical of the Beat Generation, a story of perhaps beat life in the early 50s, all centering around this famous magazine that was underway at the time. Yeah, Rick Averill, is that how we
pronounce
your name, Craig?
Happy to be here. Thanks so much for having us on.
Let's get you on this microphone here. Can you be heard on this one?
All right, let's see.
Yeah, you heard a lot better.
Rick Averill. Yeah, I'm happy to be here from the Lawrence Arts
Center. He's the director and has written some additional book as well on the for the play The Nervous Set. Like I said, a jazz musical, Beat Generation. My knowledge of the beatnik culture. You know, mostly it's from popular culture, from television shows, movies.
Yeah, everybody thinks about Dobie Gillis, and
this is
pre-Dobie Gillis. This is not the same thing. Actually, you know, a lot of people, for a cultural frame, if you watch the early days of Mad Men on television, there were several places where Don Draper intersected with members of the Beat Generation, and that was kind of a more realistic portrayal of the young Beats. These were guys, many of them, like Ginsberg and Kerouac, had been against the war. World War II.
That's right. That's the one they're talking about.
And people don't think about anybody being against that war because that was the Greatest Generation. Well, these members of the Greatest Generation were smoking pot. They were writing great poems and writing on the road, these classics of the Beat Generation. And two of the characters, Danny and Jack, are patterned after Allen Ginsberg and Jack Kerouac.
Yeah, and Allen Ginsberg, kind of the rebel of his time. This was the early 50s, you said?
Yeah, actually, Neurotica, which was the name of the literary magazine, which was published by Jay Landesman. His wife, Fran Landesman, was the author of all the lyrics that are in the show. And Jay published Neurotica from about 1948 to about 1952, and first published Kerouac, Ginsberg, Marshall McLuhan, you know, was another one that was published by that. Really, some of the greatest voices. John Cleland Holmes, who wrote the book Go, which is a classic novel of the Beat Generation. All these guys were hanging around together in the village, and then going up to Times Square and buying drugs from William Burroughs, and coming back and writing.
They lived in Lawrence, by the way.
Yeah.
You're from Lawrence, Rick.
Yeah, and that's the reason, really, that was the incipient reason why we came across this musical, was we did a celebration, a commemoration of Burroughs, the 100th anniversary of his birth this last year. And Burroughs was actually the featured artist at our art auction, and we did a lot of events relating to Burroughs during the course of the year. And right at the beginning of that curatorial process, when we were looking for things to do that might have to do with Burroughs, we looked to see if there were any musicals of the Beat Generation, of that generation, any musicals that even referred to Burroughs. And this was as close as we could come. This musical played on Broadway in 1959, and it was developed in St. Louis at the Crystal Palace in the Gaslight District prior to it going to Broadway. And, of course, Burroughs was from St. Louis. Jay Landisman was from St. Louis. They were both children of wealth. They didn't really know each other very well until they got to New York into Greenwich Village. But they did intersect. There were no original scenes with Burroughs in them in this musical when I first got a hold of it, but now there's one.
You wrote one in.
Yeah.
That was your contribution to the book as well.
Yeah, I did a few things. Mostly, the book had some problems. It had been through a lot of generations of people trying to work it. When the play went to Broadway, it got pared down and changed a lot, and they'd already sold the rights to Spring Can Really Hang You Up the Most, which is the most famous song from the musical, which never was on the Broadway stage. It's the definitive song from the musical, and they didn't have the rights to it. And so it didn't do as well on Broadway in terms of money as the money people wanted, the producers wanted. They put it in Big House in Broadway instead of a little off-Broadway house. And so it kind of flopped on Broadway, and one of the reasons was that they noodled around so much with the script that it didn't really know what it wanted to be. And since that time, several people have made good efforts to try to get the book on track so that it would match up with the music. And I was very fortunate to get the opportunity to work on the book a little bit. And I went back to a novel by Jay Landisman called The Nervous Set, which was written in 1952. Very similar novel to John Clunan Holmes' novel Go, in that it was kind of about marriage and relationships and what works and didn't work in that time period and about that scene. And Jay Landisman's voice in that novel was very, very clear. Who he was, his sense of humor, his relationship with Kerouac, with Ginsberg, with his wife, all of that came through. So I pulled a lot of material. So rather than really saying I actually rewrote the play, what I did was I pulled more of Jay's words and put those into the play and kind of streamlined the plot so that it really, you know, made some sense, and reordered the songs. And so I did almost more what a director does than what a writer does. I wouldn't call myself a playwright on it, although I did some effective playwriting in certain places, but more kind of reshaped the piece and made it a different presentation, gave it a different sense.
Yeah, you have some interesting talent in the show as well. I guess the Landisman character is played by Seth Golay.
You know, our wonderful local Kansas City actor, Seth Golay, who a couple of years ago played Mac the Knife in the Three Penny Opera for me in our professional production of that. So I love working with Seth. I first worked with him at the Coterie Theater. I directed Stuart Little. So he started out being a mouse for me, and now he's progressed to be all these major leading roles. And Seth's wonderful. And also from Kansas City, opposite him, we have Megan Birdsall. And, of course, she's just the quintessential jazz singer. And this is a great jazz score. This score was written by jazz great Tommy Wolfe, who was in love with Fran Landisman. The Landismans had an open marriage. They loved everybody. They slept with everybody. Fran Landisman's broke Tommy Wolfe's heart. He went off to L.A. and wrote a lot of jazz scores for films. But before he left, they'd written all these songs, which Jay put together into the shape of a musical there in the Gaslight District in St. Louis. So we love having Megan because she brings that real sense of what a jazz singer brings to that kind of thing, to the music. And she's wonderful. And then at the bass, of course, we have Jeff Harshbarger, who's probably the premier bassist here in the Kansas City jazz scene. No offense to other bassists in Kansas City.
He's also a disc jockey on our station.
Yes, yes. I guess people know him pretty well around here. Yeah. Jeff's been wonderful. He's been a really real treasure for us in terms of really getting a sense of the nature of the jazz and how it's to be played. Our pianist, Patty Ahern, has worked for me a lot. Our guitarist is a young guy named Joe Schoonover. Watch out for him because he's an up-and-coming guitarist, beautiful jazz guitar. And then our drummer's Taylor Babb. He's a great drummer, too. We brought a couple of actors in from New York, in part with our artist residency fund. We have a very large artist residency fund that pays for visual artists. We have a ceramicist for a year, and we have a printmaker for a year. But we also have quite a fund of money in the performing arts budget, which is what I direct. And so we were able to bring Tom Picasso, who's a Kansas City native and has performed at the New Theater and several theaters here in town. And Tom came back to play the Ginsberg character. He's absolutely wonderful. And is Seth's equal. The two of them singing this song about New York where they just trash songs about New York is probably to me, it's one of the highlights of the show. And we brought another actor back from New York, Alex Kipp. Alex Kipp was a KU grad and he's a physical theater guy and he plays the Gershom Legman character. Nobody will know the name Gershom Legman unless you are a student of dirty limericks. Because in his later life, this old beatnik ended up publishing volumes and volumes of dirty jokes and dirty limericks.
Because what they considered dirty back then probably...
Oh,
isn't much now.
Oh, no, they're pretty raunchy. I would say one, but I just read your description of what guests are supposed to say and not say. And we would be up for obscenity charges, which is also what this play is about.
I've heard that.
Yeah, Neurotica was censored by the U.S. Postal Censorship Board. And the Yogi character, which is based on Gershom Legman, was really eager to get them to come down so that he'd get a forum. He'd actually have a forum to argue against censorship. His greatest line was, murder is a crime, but describing it is not. Sex is not a crime, but describing it is.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty much the way it is, yeah. Yeah. Censorship was probably even more so in the 1950s.
Oh yeah, in fact, if you read I've got a volume of all 9 issues of Neurotica, and you read it, and you know there are some pretty pithy jokes and things like that, but you don't see the F-bomb a lot. You don't see language. You don't really see the kind of coarseness of language that you would expect from a magazine that was in the process of being censored.
Yeah.
You know, they talk about things. They talk about, you know, the magazine had personal ads. You know, it was a little like a pre-pitch pitch. You know, it had a lot of personals at the back of it. And the personals are surprisingly, you know, there are things that Dan Savage would envy, you know, that people were advertising. And that's cool. But it really bothered the post office that somebody was publishing those kinds of things, B&D and S&M and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. This magazine, I would have thought that it would have been popular within its crowd, but people outside the crowd objected to this?
Yeah. Within the crowd, it was thought to be really, you know, hot stuff. There was another magazine around the same time that I think was called Cesspool. I mean, they had all these there were a lot of alternative magazines. Jay Landesman wasn't the only one doing it at the time, but they were publishing this, you know, this little on-the-edge stuff, and those kinds of literary magazines, of course, lasted. I mean, to this day we have literary magazines, but those kind of alternative magazines were really huge too in the 60s in the hippie generation.
Oh, yeah.
Right, all those kind of alternative things. So, and so much of what happened in the 60s grew out of this beat generation. These were the first guys to talk about recreational pot and the importance of that to creating a vision. They did a lot of drugs. They were, you know, they didn't understand how the straight world could see. Actually, the phrase straight meant you were high.
Uh-huh,
I want to get straight meant I want to get high. That word flip-flopped in the 60s.
Sure.
Because in the 60s, somebody was straight as somebody who would never think of getting high. But they were also very bohemian. They were actually living this kind of free love lifestyle in a nihilistic sort of way prior to the, you know, they weren't quite the love generation of the hippies, although, you know, Kerouac embraced Buddhism and became very strong in Buddhism. They all kind of went through Buddhist periods, Ginsberg, everybody, which kind of, you know, was before the hippie generation, of course, embraced a lot of meditation and Eastern.
See, some people, they say, well, isn't that the same thing? The beat generation and the hippies generation, but it's really not. It's hard for me to explain the difference. Maybe you should
the
take
beats
a crack
were,
at it.
The beats were a little more nihilistic, a little more down on the, they didn't find that the beauty of love. They didn't promote that kind of acid let's be the generation of love as opposed to it. They were combative. They were, confrontational. They were wanting to talk about, there's another line from Landesman about these are the cats who have the connection to the heartbeat of a society in decay. So, yeah. they were all about the fact that the American dream, post-World War II American dream, was a farce. So they felt that people didn't understand what was really important in life and the people that were living in these ticky-tacky houses. And the next generation literally dropped out, right? They did tune in, turn on, drop out. Yeah. The Beats were more like, they weren't even self-aware of trying to establish an underground. They just were the underground. They were just this different voice. They were listening to jazz, and they liked kind of being this parallel lifestyle. There was nothing proselytizing about the Beats. They didn't want to make everybody else beatniks. They just knew that they were beat. And the word beat is absolutely wonderful, and they loved that sense of that word. It means they were beat, they were beaten down by society, they had the beat of music. Just like nervous set, that's a nervous set of people. And nervous means neurotic, that's a neurotic set of people. And the contemporary society at that time made people that had any sense of intelligentsia and so on, made them neurotic. If you were actually trying to function in the society in a normal way, you would become neurotic if you had any intelligence at all. So everyone was going to psychiatrists. There's several references to analysts. Our set consists of three things: a giant record player, so there's a turntable for the actors to turn on, a giant martini glass, and a psychiatrist's couch.
Says it pretty well, I think. I guess the classic definition for beatnik, one who lives like there is no tomorrow.
So exactly.
They didn't have a whole lot of hope, I guess.
Yeah. It was a much more nihilistic time. It was like the next generation, the hippies said, but love will be the answer. We can find the answer if we all love one another, and that will be the alternative to society. And the Beats were kind of just saying, it's done. If you have any brains, you'll just listen to jazz and smoke up and sleep with anybody that's around. And, it was free love before they talked about free love. People were just they were very open about the connections that they made with each other, centrally. And of course, in many cases, that didn't work out. In the play, the main marriage that's in the play between the Brad and Jan character, which are patterned after Jay and Fran Landesman, that part of the interpersonal relationships is that relationship falls apart. He sleeps with an actress and she sleeps with the Kerouac character. Everybody back then slept with Kerouac, men and women. And he didn't have to make any effort for that to happen. He was just this magnet, just this sexually charged, interesting, charismatic, moody, wine drinking, Benzedrine snorting guy.
And traveled the country, really. Rode the rails, however you want to say it.
And he was very much an observer. These guys were a lot of observers. I mean, Kerouac had adventures that kind of came to him, but a lot of what he wrote about, Neil Cassady, his friend, Neil Cassady was really the kind of the epitome of what everybody saw as being beat. Mm-hmm. Cassady loved cars. He loved women. He loved jazz. He loved marijuana. And he would stand in a party in a room, and he'd just kind of bounce up and down and nod his head and listen to the jazz and go, yeah, man, that's it, yeah, man, that's beat, that's cool, that's hip. Yeah. And that was the essence of the alternative way to looking at society was to just listen to jazz and express yourself.
And when if you look at both sides, you have to wonder, well, maybe the beatniks are closer to being right than the hippie generation was in many ways.
Well, and you look at, there's nothing really terminally unique about any of these kind of bohemian generations. I'm very attracted to bohemian material. I mean, operatically, I love La Boheme. In terms of musicals, American musicals, I like Rent, which is based on La Boheme. Hair, which is the hippie musical. But all of them are about the bohemian culture of their time. You know, it's about that. And they're all kind of about coming of age. Each generation of artists, you know, finds this. And usually they find some amount of nihilism as, you know, as part of the answer. So the emo movement and even today's contemporary hipsters, I think contemporary hipsters, whatever that means, have a lot in common with the beatniks. Probably more in common now with the beatniks than with the hippies.
Probably so. Yeah. It just has evolved that way. No way anyone can plan the way society evolves.
Right, and it'll keep, you know, that spectrum will keep kind of moving one direction and the other. But I think the people that, it was interesting, we had a couple came that had been in school in Grinnell University, a couple a little bit older than me, and they said, this is really neat. You said, we watched that, and that looked like there were beatniks on our college campus, and we recognized them, this took us back to them, and we were the ones who were square. But they loved the memory of the time. It really does. The language of it, and I love the language of it, and that's one of the reasons why I've stayed so true to Landesman's voice and his language. You really feel like you're sitting in that kind of post-World War II time period. It's really evocative. It's very much a period piece, and of a period that hasn't gotten much play except for the numerous times that people sort of made fun of the Beats.
Sure. Let's get the particulars for you. Performances continue on Thursday the 9th at 8 o'clock p.m.
Yes, 8 o'clock every night.
Friday the 10th at 8, mm-hmm. Saturday the 11th at 8, then Thursday the 16th at 8, Friday the 17th at 8, and Saturday the 18th at 8. So 1, 2, 3, 6 big performances left at the Lawrence Arts Center, 940 New Hampshire Street, Lawrence, Kansas. If you MapQuest things, zip code 66044, the number to call for more information, 785-843-2787, or just hop online. Yes, if you're in Kansas City, you can get the website of the Lawrence Arts Center, lawrencearts.org, for more information on the Nervous Set, the jazz musical of the Beat Generation.
Thank you very much.
A different take on things.
It's a lot of fun. It's cabaret seating, too. Everybody sits at tables. We have a great bar menu of martinis and snacks and some vintage beers and vintage soda pops. So everything is that environment. Only seats about 100 to 120 people per night, so people should get their calls.
Along with the music, you might hear a poem or two.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I would imagine it was never that. Thank you so much for coming and telling us all about it. Rick Averill, the director, he wrote some additional book as well. So that means he added to the story from its original form. Yeah, cool man.
Cool daddy.
Can you snap your fingers?
Yeah. It's been a good time. I've had a ball working with it. Talented cast, talented musicians, and great material. And it's really been fun. And so if you're hip, you'll come.
The Nervous Set, Lawrence Arts Center, lawrencearthcenter.org, or the phone number to call 785-843-2787. Might even come in costume. That might make it more fun for you as well.
You
bet. All right. Thanks so much, Rick, for being with us. The fun drive continues. Call in your support to support community radio, KKFI, the number to call for you to do that. We're giving out a lot of phone numbers. I don't hope no one is confused. The phone number to call for our fun drive is 888-931-0901 or online at kkfi.org to help support community radio here in Kansas City. The Jazz Insider is next, by the way. More information, more great jazz to come the way. Jazz from 1 to 3, the blues from 3 to 6, right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. So until next we meet, ladies and gentlemen, at that cross in the road, I'm Michael Hoag. We'll see you next time.